Hello and welcome to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me in a bit will be Tim Phillips, and we will be tackling our first new review of 2021, though it is technically a review of a movie that came out earlier in 2020. Of course, that will probably be kind of a theme going forward. Release dates are not what they once were, because obviously we're still in pandemic and we're still in lockdown, and you know, it's gonna be hard to sort out, you know, what's coming out in 2021 and what's left over from 2020 until we can get back into those movie theaters, which will hopefully be soon, though we're still not holding our breath. Anyway, End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 3 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new romantic comedy time loop flick, Palm Springs. That will be in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to look ahead to movies coming out in 2021, or at least we hope are coming out in 2021. For reasons I have previously said. So anyway, I have prepared a top 10 for movies that I'm going to be keeping my eye out for in 2021. They are in no particular order. And again, I mean, no one knows for sure what's going to happen. I mean, some of these movies, if they are from Warner Brothers, if you live in the United States, you know that Warner Brothers movies are coming out simultaneously, day and date, on HBO Max and in theaters, where theaters are open. It's not exactly sure how this is going to work out in Canada. We do know that in Canada, Wonder Woman 1984, which had a simultaneous release in the US in theaters and on HBO Max, was also picked up by premium VOD platforms. Is that what's going to happen here in Canada with something like, say, Dune? The Denis Villeneuve adaptation, which will come out later in 2021 and is, like all WB releases, going to come out on HBO Max and the theaters simultaneously. I mean, that's going to be December, so it's entirely possible by that point. We may be able to go back to the theaters completely, but who knows? Anyway, so this list is, shall we say, tepid, temporary? Perhaps, not to be taken literally? I don't know. Either way, this is this is how we're going to approach it for now. Alright. On the top of my list, and again, this is in no particular order, I have, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which is a Marvel superhero movie. It was supposed to come out early this coming year. I think it was supposed to come out in spring, but it is now pushed back to the summer. And I have this on my list because look for it to do for Asian audiences what Black Panther did for Black audiences, because it's a predominantly Asian cast, or an Asian American cast. It is, of course, led by Simu Liu, who is a Canadian actor. He plays the titular Shang-Chi, which is, I don't know much about this character, except that his superpower involves the martial arts. And, as I said, it's a predominantly Asian cast. So, you know, you have Simu Liu, but you also have Michelle Yeoh. Awkwafina is also in this. So it should be interesting to see how this is embraced. I imagine it's going to be embraced quite well. For number two, I do have a second superhero movie. It is The Suicide Squad, and it will come out sometime later this summer. It is James Gunn directing this sort of sequel, sort of do-over, I think, to Suicide Squad, which was the David Ayer movie that came out in 2016. A lot of people loved it. A lot of people, a lot more people, kind of hated it. It was not a great movie that was made even worse because the studio took it away and seemed to edit it, listening to, top 40 radio, which is it just had this really off tone about it. Anyway, the Suicide Squad, as directed by James Gunn, is going to be kind of like a 70s war movie exploitation movie. They are holding on to a lot of the same cast, so Joel Kinnaman is back as Colonel Flagg, Margot Robbie's back as Harley Quinn, Jay Courtney is back as Captain Boomerang, and Viola Davis is back as Waller. I almost forgot her character's name. For what kind of comic book geek am I? Anyway, so they're going to be there, but you also have a lot of great new actors coming in and like small sort of D-list supervillain parts, like John Cena as the Peacemaker. You have Pete Davidson. I can't remember if Pete Davidson's playing Polka Dot Man or not. Peter Capaldi's playing a part. There's also going to be King Shark. Michael Rooker's, of course, in it because it's James Gunn. So there's lots to look forward to. The only real footage that's come out is this kind of like behind the scenes video that was released during DC Fandom, and it has gotten a lot of hits. Just that seeing that like unfinished footage on its own has gotten a lot of people excited, myself included, actually. I have next on my list Candyman, which is this reboot, rejigger, remake, continuation of the original Candyman movies. Jordan Peele is producing, Nia DaCosta is directing, and apparently whatever she did with this Candyman is so good, it kind of inspired Marvel to snatch her up to make this Captain Marvel sequel. But it's good. It stars Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who has been getting a lot of great stuff lately. He was one of the villains in the Aquaman movie. He was in Watchmen. He was in Trial of the Chicago 7. And so he really is taking off. This is going to be a big year for him with a lot of high-profile roles. So Tony Todd is back as well. So that is big. Tony Todd is such a great presence whenever he's on screen. So very much looking forward to this. Deeply disappointed it couldn't come out last year because I would have already seen it anyway. Speaking of could have seen it last year, Halloween Kills, which is the direct sequel to Halloween 2018. It's the continuation of that story, the kind of last stand against Michael Myers between Laurie Strode and her family. This one kind of expands the reunion aspect because it brings back the characters of Tommy Doyle and Lindsay Wallace, who were the kids that Jamie Lee Curtis was babysitting in the original Halloween. So they recast Tommy Doyle. Anthony Michael Hall is playing Tommy Doyle, which is great casting, by the way. I could totally see that kid growing up to be Anthony Michael Hall. The original Lindsay Wallace, though, an actress named Kyle Richards, she will be back playing Lindsay Wallace. She is still a working actress, and perhaps that's one of the reasons why the Tommy Doyle part was recast. That actor doesn't... He was a child actor who went on with his life anyway. Marion Chambers, the nurse from Dr. Loomis's nurse from the original Halloween. The character's name is Marion Chambers, and Nancy Stevens, the actress who played her, is also coming back. So it's the same creative team. Jamie Lee Curtis is back. Judy Greer is back. It is going to be very, very interesting to see if to see exactly how they follow up, because it really does seem like a pre-planned thing. Like they really understood where they would like to take each subsequent chapter, and it's going to be a sort of a three-parter by the time it's all said and done. Though I guarantee you, if it's successful, it's going to be a four-parter. Moving on. At number five, I have The Matrix Part 4. This is coming out in December, or at least it's presently scheduled to come out in December. It was shooting when COVID struck, and COVID kind of interrupted that. And you may have seen the spy set photos of Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss riding a motorcycle around Berlin. And, of course, if you also know the original series of Matrix films, both those characters die at the end of the third Matrix movie. So you're thinking to yourself, how are they back? Well, that's a great mystery going into the Matrix 4, because we really have no idea how these characters come back, what the story is. That is obviously being kept under tight lip and tight security. We do know that Lambert Wilson is going to be back. He played the Merovingian in the Matrix sequels. Jada Pinkett Smith will also be back. She played Niobe in the Matrix sequels. They're being joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Priyanka Chopra, Jessica Henwick, and the aforementioned Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. So it's a great cast, even though we know nothing about who's playing who. So that will be interesting to see later this year. Moving on to the number 6 pick, it is Raya and the Last Dragon. Here's another great bit of representation for Asian movie lovers, because it is, I don't know if it's based on an original story or based on a legend or what it is, but it is. We have two Asian actresses, Kelly Marie Tran playing Raya and Awkwafina playing the Last Dragon. And the two have to team up to get to the to become a fighting force against some creature that is threatening the village before dragons and humans had teamed together to clear them out. In several hundred years later, they come back and there's only one dragon left. And it sounds charming. I'm sure it is. Disney obviously is a premier name in charm. Interestingly, this comes not from Pixar, but it comes from Disney itself. So it's from the same Frozen, Tangled, Zootopia, like that wing of Disney, and not necessarily Pixar. So it should be very interesting to watch. And I mean, it's great to see Kelly Marie Tran, especially after having to shovel all that garbage from butthurt fanboys and neckbeards on given her involvement in Star Wars. Number 7, I have Judas and the Black Messiah. And if you saw, what is it called? The Trial of the Chicago 7. This was kind of like a subplot to the Trial of the Chicago 7, involving Bobby Seale. Fred Hampton, who was the leader of the Black Panthers in Chicago, was killed in the middle of that trial. And this is that story. It is the story of William O'Neill, who was infiltrating the Black Panthers on behalf of the FBI, and how all of that led to the death of Fred Hampton in 1969. Interesting cast, because you have Daniel Kaluuya as Hampton, and you have Lakeith Stanfield as O'Neill. So that's a really great pair of actors to sort of launch this from. And it'll be really exciting to see them. I don't know if they butt heads or not, but I actually don't know much about the story behind it. But it'll be interesting to see those two actors square off, because they are two really great, solid young actors. Number 8, I have The Last Duel, which is directed by Ridley Scott, is from a screenplay co-written by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, who I believe have not written anything together since Good Will Hunting. And it takes place in the 14th century, and it co-stars Adam Driver, who accuses Matt Damon of raping his wife, and that ends up in, well, you know what, a duel. And Ben Affleck plays King Charles II. I'm interested to see how this turns out, because are they going to be doing French accents? Because it takes place in 14th century France. Are they just going to talk normally? If it's the French accents, I think that's going to be very goofy. And I mean, Ridley Scott himself, you know, when it comes to these historical epics he does, like, is it going to be on par with something like, I don't know, Kingdom of Heaven? Or is it going to be something like Exodus Gods and Kings, I think that one was called, or Robin Hood? I mean, he's kind of hit and miss with these things. Gladiator, of course, still stands. But can he do something really interesting with some material, given the setting and given the actors he's working with? And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, because I do not want to see Matt Damon and Ben Affleck doing Pepe Le Pew accents, but maybe we'll see what happens. Anyway, number 9. I have Elvis, which will forever be famous for the movie where Tom Hanks got COVID-19. Yeah, this movie was shooting in Australia earlier this year. I believe it is still shooting, but or it was had recently wrapped or something. Anyway, Tom Hanks plays Colonel Tom Parker, who is, of course, the manager of Elvis Presley. And Tom Hanks was shooting this movie when he and his wife caught COVID, kind of the first celebrity COVID victim. Anyway, it's about Elvis's life and his career. I don't know what new you can say about Elvis's life and career at this point. Elvis is being played by an actor named Austin Butler, who I do not know terribly well. He did have a small role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And he did a TV series called Switched at Birth, which I do not know. But he's an up-and-coming actor, so, you know, maybe he will be Elvis incarnate, really filling those shoes of Elvis. I guess we will have to wait and see. The reason why this movie could be interesting is not necessarily because of that, but because of Baz Luhrmann. This is Baz Luhrmann's first movie since The Great Gatsby, which he made in 2013, and only the second movie he's made in the last 10 years, because before that he did Australia, which came out in 2008. So he's not been... Well, I don't want to say he hasn't been prolific, because I believe he did do a couple of TV shows in that time. But in terms of, like, the movies, because he's a really interesting filmmaker, he hasn't been able to do much lately. And that's a shame. So it'll be... I have my fingers crossed for Elvis. I don't know what, if anything, new or interesting it can say. I guess we'll wait and see. And then for number 10, I have The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which you may or may not be able to surmise. It's about Tammy Faye Baker and her husband Jim Baker, who were famous televangelists in the 1980s. And Jim Baker famously went to jail for a variety of schemes, get-rich-quick schemes, basically using their church as a way to sell timeshares in Florida. Tammy Faye Baker was famous for her liberal use of mascara and eyeshadow, so the eyes of Tammy Faye seem apt. Great cast, I have to say. You have Andrew Garfield as Jim Baker. You have Jessica Chastain as Tammy Faye. I think Jessica Chastain is kind of setting herself up as an Oscar hopeful. it just... you know, you'd have to play big to play Tammy Faye Baker, I think, and given the makeup involved, I think this is Jessica Chastain making a real run for the 2022 Oscars. And Vincent D'Onofrio is co-starring as Jerry Falwell, so I'll be very interested to see that, especially all the trouble that Jerry Falwell's namesake got into late last year, and you can look that up if you like. So that's my kind of top 10. I did make a note of, like, other movies I'm really interested in seeing. I mean, like, there's comic movies on here, like Black Widow and Eternals. The next Spider-Man movie and the Spider-Man Homecoming Far From Home live-action film series. The next Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movie comes out in 2022. There's, of course, James Bond, No Time to Die. The next Fast and Furious movie, F9. Peter Jackson's Beatles documentary, Let It Be. The next Conjuring movie, that Spiral movie, which is like the Jigsaw spinoff that stars Chris Rock and Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, that's just, it's weird. Mission Impossible Part 7, because you get everybody's coming back, who was in Fallout, plus Haley Atwell, Shea Wingham. Who's Isai Morales? He's the villain. I forgot his name for a minute. And I also put on my list Jackass 4, not necessarily because I've always been a big fan of the Jackass movies, but, you know, those guys are pushing 50, and you gotta wonder, you know, do they have a death wish or something? Just looking, yeah, Johnny Knoxville turns 49 this year. So, will they finally kill themselves on film? I guess we will find out in Jackass Part 4. What we will find out next in this show is whether or not the time loop comedy Palm Springs is a good movie worth your time. We will find out after this musical break. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. In the end, it doesn't even matter. It's all too
Et amici.
Who is that?
Niles, what are you doing?
Going for the safe, babe. I'd like to share my thoughts on love.
What are you talking about? No.
Yes. This is good.
That's his boyfriend.
Why is he dressed for a luau?
Oh my God, Niles.
We are born lost. Then we're found. But we're all just lost, am I right?
Oh my God.
However, in the darkness comes light. Tala Ann Wilder and Abraham Eugene Trenchleafen, who do not look like siblings. You see, their optimism, their selflessness, it's in their blood. And Tala, there's something that a lot of people here don't know about you, but they should. I hope you don't mind. It's not just time and money that Tala has given to so many charitable causes. She has also donated of herself, bone marrow. That's right.
How did he know that?
She gave hers to her baby brother, Nico, saving his life. But now it's time for us to give to you. Here you are.
And that was a clip from Palm Springs. It's the new film from Max Barbacow, and it stars Andy Samberg, Krista Milioti, J.K. Simmons, Meredith Hagner, Camila Mendez, Tyler Hoechlin, and Peter Gallagher. I'm now being joined on the line by Tim Phillips. Tim, Happy New Year. How are you doing in this 2021 so far?
Happy New Year, Adam. Yeah, it seems very similar to 2020 so far, but I'm hoping as the year goes on, maybe we'll have a New Year's celebration later in the year where things get better, but holding steady, getting by, had a nice break. So yeah, looking forward to this year and hoping things improve and everybody stays healthy and safe.
Yeah, I did see somebody online already joke about how we're in the 13th month of 2020 and things are not going any better. But such as it is, I think that gives us a nice segue into this week's movie, which is Palm Springs, which very much is of a piece with the idea that we're living in a kind of Groundhog Day scenario where every day feels very much like the last. So you wanted to review this one, Tim. What appealed you to checking out Palm Springs?
Yeah, like you said, Adam, it seems like perfect timing for a movie like that where you're sort of reliving the same day over and over in the sort of pandemic lockdown world we're in. So that was appealing. And also just listening to Spotify a lot, there are a lot of obnoxious ads for this that reminded me it was on Amazon Prime, almost stopped me from watching it because they were so annoying, but it made me think, yeah, I should check out this film. Funny premise, Lonely Island produced, Andy Samberg. I was looking forward to it. I know there's a lot of comparisons to Groundhog Day, which I really like. I was hoping it wouldn't be like a carbon copy, and it's not. And I was happily surprised by some new elements they added with the two characters inside the time loop, Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti. And I thought that was great how it all worked. And I was looking for something that was a good blend of comedy, laugh out loud comedy, and something a bit deeper. And I think it checked both boxes for me. I did laugh out loud, and it I felt there was a good story behind it, and you know, a good look at like how we live our lives, and you know, how we choose our partners, and you know, a very romantic story at the end of the day. So I really liked it.
Are you a Sandberg fan?
I like him. I like a lot of what he did with on Saturday Night Live and the Lonely Island stuff. So I'm a fan of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched all of his movies, but I like him. And I would say in this, I really liked his performance, because it was that I don't care type performance, which you look back at like, you look back at like Groundhog Day, that's what Bill Murray's known for, right? Is that I don't care. So there might have been a bit of inspiration from that. And I thought it went well. It really helped sort of ground the movie. He wasn't like a big sketch or anything, right? So that's what I really liked. It wasn't like just playing for laughs all the time. Like some comedies, you know, a lot of SNL comedies are like that. So I really liked his performance in this specifically, and I think he did really well. And Kristen Milioti, I thought, did an excellent job too. So the acting's, I think, first rate. And yeah, I really liked how they worked together on this premise. You know, we've seen Time Loop before. We've seen Groundhog Day, and there have been other films with like the Time Loop scenario. But I think this was sort of this was a fresh script that really brought some new ideas to it. And like I said, I thought it was really funny, laughed out loud, and I think it brought it home with kind of made you laugh for a while, and then sort of brought it home with sort of like, you know, looking at what choices we make in life and what's important to us in life. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with all of that. I've been kind of flipping through our shows for the last year, because I could have swore we did another Time Loop movie in the last year, because it seems to have been like a theme. It feels like a theme, and maybe I'm in a time loop myself, because I know examples are coming to mind. But I mean, there have been movies like where the kind of premise is the same, or the theme is kind of the same, like something like Old Guard, which is about like immortal people who, you know, feel like they're, you know, in this kind of time loop, this kind of endless war, as the characters in that movie are mercenaries. Or maybe I'm guess thinking maybe too about Lovebirds, which came out last spring, which is about two people who aren't sure they belong together, but are caught in a mystery. So I guess it may be, there's an overall sense of familiarity that it's kind of borrowing elements from other things I've recently watched. But Sandberg, I've always found interesting. I kind of outgrew Saturday Night Live by the time he and the Lonely Island guys became a part of it. But I did enjoy Hot Rod, which was their first sort of big movie coming off their SNL success, that I probably watched still at least once a year, because it is such a funny comedy. Pop Star is like incredibly subversive and cutting, and it's also laugh out loud hilarious too. And what I find interesting about this is like it is a Lonely Island production, but it is not a Lonely Island like generated idea. Like, it didn't come from Akiva Schaffer or Jorma Taccone or Andy Sandberg themselves. They're producers. They're kind of talent scouting this, because the director Max Barbacow and the screenwriter Andy Sierra, I think his name is, this is kind of like their first big feature. It's certainly Barbacow's feature debut. He's done a lot of shorts and things. This is Sierra's first feature script. He was like a staff writer on a TV show before that. So it is interesting that this does feel like a growth piece I mean, for Sandberg in particular, as sort of a comedic actor, there's less of the zany stuff. It does feel very much like he's channeling Bill Murray, which is a compliment because obviously no one can be Bill Murray but Bill Murray. But he is channeling that sort of nihilistic go with the flow.
Nothing matters kind of
aesthetic. And it's also, you know, interesting that as creatives, as, you know, people behind the camera too, they're also seeking out new talent to elevate that. And it seems to be a really good marriage of man and material. And you're right, Kristen Milioti, who people may remember as the mother from How I Met Your Mother, she is a really great talent, and she's a real match for what Sandberg is bringing, because she's as a character, she's kind of carrying that nihilism too, or that like sort of, oh, my life sucks, so I might as well be in a time loop kind of feel. But there is also something more going on, as you kind of are revealed, like it's revealed throughout the movie, sort of like the reasons she's there and what happens to her every time she wakes up in the time loop. And it is really what I find really interesting about the movie is how dark it can get, mm-hmm. and then how funny it can get, and how both of those flavors are able to coexist in the same movie. And a lot of that is actually, a lot of it is in both their storylines, but I mean, especially in the Christina, or the Kristen Milioti, I'm going to call her because there's a singer named Christina Million. So I'm going to get those two confused at some point, but okay. Kristen Milioti, her storyline seems like especially dark. It's a really difficult high wire act to perform, and that's why it's kind of even more surprising that this is like the first feature from both the director and the screenwriter. But it is impressive that that the two sides of this, or the two parts of the brain of this movie, are able to coexist so well.
Yeah, I think you said it well there, Adam. I think it really melds well, like the comedy and the gravitas of the situation, and sort of you know, the decisions being made, like you said, with the Kristen Milioti character, she's made some bad decisions, but so is the Andy Samberg, and they keep making these bad decisions. And then when they're stuck in the time loop, they're like, well, what's the point? We'll continue making bad decisions. We'll continue doing, you know, we won't really grow from this experience. And then as it goes on, they do grow within their relationship, for sure. And even Kristen Milioti learns gets a lot of scientific knowledge, but that's sort of like practical knowledge she needs to plan her escape. But as opposed to like in Groundhog Day, where he's just starts learning stuff, right? Like in that movie, he learns the piano, or I forget, like violin. And yeah, it's, but this, yeah, and I think, and it's good because, like I said, it's great to see a movie where I like laugh out loud, and then also it feels deeper. It's so unrealistic in the fact that they're stuck in a time loop here. They're going to this wedding every day, and then they're trying to do other things, trying to entertain themselves. It's so unrealistic in that sense, but then it's so realistic in like how it looks at relationships, like Andy Samberg sort of in this relationship where they're with his girlfriend, and they don't even like each other, but they're just continuing on with this charade basically. And then Chris Emiliotti's like, oh, she likes sleeps around, you know, and she's kind of been in made some really bad choices with who she's hooked up with. So it's interesting in that sense. And then I think it's real typecasting, but I really enjoyed J.K. Simmons as the Nobody does sadism better than J.K. Simmons. And they brought him in, and you're like, okay, like, we've seen this before, but it's so good. Like, it's, he's just such a, when he plays, like, crazy sadist, he's, like, the best. It's just hilarious. And
he won an Oscar for it.
Yeah, exactly. And his like, especially that, like, that night of partying with the Andy Samberg character, it's just so funny. It's like, we're gonna live today. Today's was the best day of my life. And then Andy Samberg's, oh, I can show you can do this every day if you want. And then you know, all hell breaks loose because he's the danger throughout this for Andy Samberg. But
I
thought that was great. That was great casting, although it's kind of obvious casting, but I really enjoyed that, and I thought he did a great job in his role.
Yeah, it's the small details like that, right, that we're introduced to the Andy Samberg character not at the start of his loop, but he's been through, like, several loops at this. And it's kind of implied that he's been doing this for, like, the equivalent of years at this point. And so you're kind of, it takes you a minute to kind of clue into this, because the day is at a wedding, right? They're at this destination wedding in Palm Springs. And so he wakes up, his girlfriend's there. They then go to the wedding. She's getting ready to go to the wedding, but then later go to the wedding, and he's there in, like, board shorts and a Hawaiian shirt, and you're like, I understand it, but just, like, from the impressions we've gotten, that you're kind of out of this. But really? Board shorts to a wedding? Okay. And then you kind of clue into the fact, it's like, you tune into this movie knowing in advance what the premise is, and you tune in, and then you start cluing into the fact that, like, okay, this isn't the first time through. He's been through multiple times and doesn't care anymore. And then you get to that where he picks up Kristen Milioti at the wedding, and they go into the desert, to hang out and make out, and then J.K. Simmons shows up with, like, a bow and arrow. And you're immediately thrown into this, like, oh my god, what is happening? Like, who's this bow and arrow guy? And it really hooks you into the movie, and I think that's where the film kind of manages to set itself apart from Groundhog. I mean, any film with a time loop is going to evoke Groundhog Day. Actually, no, like, anything with a time loop. If you're doing, like, an episode of a TV show with a time loop, like Next Gen, or any sci-fi show, and there's a time loop, someone is gonna make the joke about Groundhog Day. But it is clever enough to know that it's not going to escape the Groundhog Day comparisons.
Yeah.
So might as well just go with them and work within the formula. I say this a lot of the time with movies. So, like, there's nothing wrong with being formulaic as long as you can work the formula really well. And I think Palm Springs is kind of a case of that. Not that I'm saying it's especially formulaic, because as we've been saying, it does some interesting things. But there is wisdom in recognizing that people are going to recognize what you're working with. It's a matter of how you do it, not necessarily what you're doing sometimes with a movie.
Yeah. And it's good to have that. Sometimes it's good to have that formula, those boundaries that, you know, that's why there's genres too, right? You can almost, maybe there's a time loop genre. You've mentioned several films in recent years that are part of that. It's within that, you know, day after day, and, you know, Groundhog Day is part of our vocabulary now. Whenever you're having the same day, it's like, oh, it's like Groundhog Day. So that's always going to sort of, like, hang over it. But it was good that they had the confidence, and the writer, Andy Sierra, is able to add some new elements and some creativity and some originality to something that, you know, we're all aware of. And I think it really does a good job. And the performances, like we said, are so strong that it really helps carry the movie. You know, you have Peter Gallagher too, who's another great character actor, as the father. And it's funny, like every morning Andy Samberg's there because like the morning of the wedding, he's the boyfriend. Like he hasn't met most of these people before. And they're like, yeah. Who are you? Oh, I'm her boyfriend. And it's like, oh, okay. And Peter Gallagher's like, what's going on here? And it's funny that, you know, the same day over and over again, and just how crazy Andy Samberg can get and is in what he's doing and his actions, like you said. So like even early on, we join him and he can tell he just doesn't give a crap. But you think, oh, he's just one of these types who just doesn't give a crap. We've seen this in movies before. He's a rebel. He's against the rules. But it's just because he's probably so bored at that point, you know, spending years inside the time loop, and he plays it so well. It's just like, I know what's going to happen now. I know what song they're going to sing. I know what's going to happen with the dance here at the wedding. I think he does a great job with that. Very naturalistic too, which I think could help him. Obviously he's had a great career so far, but in films going forward, being able to blend the comedy with the drama.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, I'm glad he's able to show range. I haven't watched a lot of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but I know that that show in particular, given everything that happened last summer, is having to struggle to deal with like having a fun, zany show about police officers, given everything that's happening right now. So, yeah. He's not just another kind of. I mean, Adam Sandler's not just another kind of zany comedic guy. I mean, Uncut Gems kind of proved that again. But a lot of the really best comedians are able to, like Bill Murray, walk that line between complicated dramatic stuff and less complicated comedic stuff. And Andy Samberg definitely shows those. I mean, not that Palm Springs is an ultra serious movie either, but it just there's like some really grisly bits in it at times, like and in one of the loops, the bride who's played by Camila Mendez, who's I don't know if you were aware of this, she plays Veronica in the Riverdale show, and the one that's about the dark Archies show.
Okay.
But there's a scene where she comes out and she trips and smashes her front teeth. It's
so disgusting. Yeah. And they show like close up of her too. And it's like,
they kind of linger on it too. And it's just like, we're rubbing your face in it. It's Night of the Living Dead. It's, and then there's another time loop later where, Sarah, the Kristen Milioti character steps in front of like a semi. And although it doesn't kind of show what that looks like, thankfully, it's still like a brutal. I mean, that whole sequence in the desert where Roy catches up to them again and she rams him with a car.
Yeah.
it's so brutal, the implications of it. It's not that necessarily that gory, but it just, you know, when you know, remembering from earlier in the film and hearing. The Niles, Andy Samberg's character, talking about how pain is still very real, and the last thing you want to do is die slowly in the ICU.
That's right. Yeah.
There's just these like sort of wicked, kind of, you know, these wicked sequences of just like painting where it kind of paints a picture for you of just like where the downsides of living in this time loop are. And it's like, yeah, you can die and wake up tomorrow, but you know, you definitely don't want to die in pain. You definitely don't want to smash your mouth. It's just like it's again, it's just constantly walking this fine line that you know kind of shocks you out of the complacency of this world that can make you as evident in the way some of the characters are acting can make you very complacent.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it can be very dark, but just the way it's like put together and the acting and the editing and everything, it's on to the next part then, or they wake up, it's the next day. So it's like almost like that, even though it's not a dream, it's really how it's all a dream sort of thing where, okay, you wake up and then everything's back to the way it was. So they can get away with like, you could say it's very dark, like the fact that the J.K. Simmons character has spent countless days torturing the Andy Samberg character. he's been torturing him, and then Andy Samberg finally goes to his J.K. Simmons home, which is his family home. You know, he's got his kids there, his wife. It's the total nuclear family. And meanwhile, this guy is a sadistic screwball, right? And you see that in, you can see that in like a horror movie. They might have that, you know, think like a movie like The Vanishing, where okay, this guy's a family guy and then he's like abducting women, you know. So it's kind of you know, there's a lot of darkness. And then, like you're saying, the worst thing's to die slowly on the ICU, they say, right? And so that's why
it's kind of a mantra.
Yeah. So it's like just the darkest humor, right? Because we're going to kill people quickly here, so you don't end up in that situation. And like J.K. Simmons is talking about after Christine Milioti hit him with the car, how he ended up on the ICU and they wouldn't let him go to sleep because they're afraid he would die. And he's like, I wanted to die, but they're keeping me awake. And it's like the worst thing in the world. So it's, you know, and you could probably read a lot into it too, about like, you know, living your life to the fullest and stuff like that. And not, you know, knowing that anybody could die at any minute, you know. You could read stuff in like that, right? Just like our own mortality and stuff like that. But I don't, you know, they're not explicit in that, but it is there. Yeah. It's like, it's a lot about your choices, very like sort of, you know, very much so, like how our decisions affect our life. So I guess it comes down to, you know, the viewer and what they put into it. But it is like, I don't want to say it's this deep, it comes across as this heavy movie, because it's not. It's really light and it's really funny and definitely, you know, definitely a lot of laughs in it. But it does hit you near the end, especially. It hit me like, it's like, okay, this is they're really saying a lot about relationships and how you live your life and stuff like that, right?
The movie is not deep, but I think it kind of can provoke deep things, even incidentally, like the whole thing with Roy, where Niles is explaining to Sarah like the whole origin of Roy and everything. He says that, you know, he doesn't see Roy as much anymore. It's like every couple of weeks, like Roy kind of comes and tries to kill him, and you know, there's even a kind of this like sort of darkness to that. It's like in the time loop, you can only get revenge so many times before you even get bored of that. torturing the person who has put you into this like banal existence, even that gets boring. You know, theoretically, people would love this opportunity, like to take the person who sort of like taunted them and be able to torture them forever. But the movie is saying like, no, even that gets like, you have to move on eventually. Like you can't torture someone ad infinitum. That's kind of scary too. And the other thing I wanted to bring up was not to go too deep into spoilers, but the movie, the time loop is resolved through science. As you said, like she later starts like learning quantum physics one day at a time, so that she can figure out her way out of the time loop, which is typically not how these movies go or how they are resolved, right? It's usually like we have, and Groundhog Day does this too, like you have to have this epiphany, you have to go and do good things and good deeds. And I think early in the movie, Sarah draws that conclusion, like she's going to be nice to her sister and give her a nice speech and whisper a really nice thing in her ear, and that will break the loop. And of course, we've been kind of acclimatized to that in movies and things. Like, we're just going to feel our way out of it. We're going to talk it out, and we're going to learn a lesson, and then that will be the end of the story. And it's like, no, you're still stuck in this time loop. It's a science thing. You're going to have to use science to get out of it. And I found that approach really... I mean, it also kind of plays into a bit of the nihilism of the movie, that, you know, nothing matters. But it also plays into the that I think one of the bigger, broader messages of the movie, which is you kind of got to do stuff the hard way too.
Yeah, yeah, and it doesn't all come down to fate or yeah. When she was trying, she's like, "Oh, I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be a good person because I haven't been. So that's going to free me from this." And then like you said, it's yeah. She gets down to the hard work. She goes to that diner each day to study quantum physics. So yeah, it's a very practical movie in that sense too, right? So, It helps propel the movie forward as well to get it into that 90 minutes that it is for a comedy. It doesn't go off into a lot of tangents that it could, like if you're waking up in the same place every day in the same day, November 9th, every day, you could explore a lot of different creative endeavors or artistic or more traveling and they do a few things, like they date a little bit, like Andy Samberg and Christine Milioti, and they go to like a firing range and they do some things, but it's really focused on, you know, their relationship and then eventually how do they get out of the loop, how do they practically do that, and using science is a cool way to do it, right? It's not that Hollywood sort of okay, fate intervened, or I'm a good person now. I'm free from sin, so now I'm free. Yeah. You know, so that was an interesting way to resolve it, I thought, for sure.
And I would also add too that, you know, there's one of the reasons she's like sort of hesitant when Niles realizes he's in love with her, and she's like, "Well, of course you are, because like we're entrapped in this time loop together." And there's this sort of like, I'm not sure how to phrase it, but this is on her part, there's sort of like this refusal to believe that she can be loved, or that the circumstances, you know, means that he can't be in love with her, even though like it's kind of, I think he came to that conclusion because he it's revealed that maybe this was not the first time when she gets stuck when he inadvertently drags her into a loop. That's not necessarily the first time he sought her out as a romantic partner. But there's a lot of interesting stuff. Again, it's not made explicit in the text, but this idea that circumstances. This idea that you're trying to outthink the circumstances, it's like, yeah, you're trapped in a time loop with someone, but that doesn't necessarily mean you can't love them or be in a relationship with them. Just, you know, circumstances help shape us as much as anything. And perhaps we get a bit confused about like sort of the bigness of the world and how we have to find things out there instead of finding the things in here. And I'm not 100% sure that's what's in the text, but I mean, it's one of these things that sort of comes out in the course of watching and talking and thinking about this movie.
Yeah. And I'd go to like sort of a moment of epiphany for the Andy Samberg character is near the end. He's in the bar. And, you know, where he's a darts champion at this point, he's beating everybody at darts. He's obviously practiced darts and probably pool and all this. And he's there with these downtrodden characters in this bar, and he's hanging out and he's talking all philosophically. And they're like, "Whoa, how many drinks has this guy had?" Right. Cause they're just encountering him for the first time. And so he's like, "Oh, what is life?" Or, you know, stuff like, and they're like, "You're not going to find it here." One of the ladies says, you know, yeah, she just says, yeah, "You're not going to find that here." And then he realizes, you know, how important, Christine Milioti, his love interest, is, how important, you know, how great, how fulfilling things were with her. It helped, you know, fulfill his time in the loop. And he's like, okay, now I need to get back. I know he has this epiphany. I know I need to be with her. Mm-hmm. I can't just keep coming into this bar and drinking heavily and confusing everybody with my philosophy and winning at darts every day. Although that sounds like a pretty good day, but he can't do that every day, right? He's, you know,
yeah. So
it's like he's maturing as well while this is all happening.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie to be sure. It's funny, it's satisfying, and a great way to start 2021. There's nowhere to go but up from here, I think. Speaking of time loops, yeah. Anyway, Tim, people want to find you on the internet. How can they do that?
Flash in the deadpan on social media. It's a good way to find me.
And that's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it, and if you want to listen to it again, you can find it on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. Download it from the Guelph Politicast channel every Friday at Podbean. Get it through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And speaking of that Spotify app, you can find the playlist for all the music you hear on End Credits. Just go to End Credits on CFRU, search for that on Spotify, and away you go. You can find us on social media, on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show, and on Twitter at End Credits Radio. I will be back tomorrow at 5 p.m. for News and Politics on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz. In the meantime, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. You can check me out on GuelphPolitico.ca for local news and politics, and you can find my writing about horror movies at Nightmare on Film Street at NOFSPodcast.com. And stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back next Wednesday at 3 p.m. for more End Credits, and we will see you then.